Chapter 30. Almayer shrugged his shoulders. "That woman broke with Hudegon my assurance that all would be well," went on Lingard, with growing dismay. "He did. Proper thing, of course. Wife, husband. Together as it should be. Smart fellow impossible scoundrel jolly old go. Oh, damn." Almayer laughed spitefully. "How delighted he will be," he said, softly. "Who will make two people happy? Two at least." He laughed again, while Lingard looked at his shaking shoulders in consternation. "I am jammed on a lee shore this time, if ever I was," muttered Lingard. "Send her back quick," suggested Almayer, stifling another laugh. "What are you sniggering at?" growled Lingard, angrily. "I'll work it out all clear yet. Meantime you must receive her into this house." "My house?" cried Almayer, turning round. "It's mine too a little, isn't it?" said Lingard. "Don't argue," he shouted, as Almayer opened his mouth. "Bay orders and hold your tongue." "Oh, if you take it in that tone," mumbled Almayer, sulkily, with a gesture of assent. "You are so aggravating to, my boy," said the old seaman, with unexpected placidity. "Who must give me time to turn round? I can't keep her on board all the time. I must tell her something. Say, for instance, that he has gone up the river. Expected back every day. That's it. Do you hear? You must put her on that tack, and dodge her along easy, while I take the kinks out of the situation. By God!" he exclaimed, mournfully, after a short pause, "life is foul. Foul like a leaf or brace on a dirty night. And yet, one must see it clear for running, before going below for good. Now you attend to what I said," he added, sharply, "if you don't want to quarrel with me, my boy." "I don't want to quarrel with you," murmured Almayer with unwilling deference. "Why, I wish I could understand you. I know you are my best friend, Captain Lingard. Only, upon my word, I can't make you out sometimes. I wish I could." Lingard burst into a loud laugh which ended shortly in a deep sigh. He closed his eyes, tilting his head over the back of his armchair, and on his face, baked by the unclouded suns of many hard years, there appeared for a moment a weariness, and a look of age which startled Almayer, like an unexpected disclosure of evil. "I am done up," said Lingard, gently. "Perfectly done up. All night on deck getting that schooner up the river. Then talking with you. Seems to me, I could go to sleep on a clothesline. I should like to eat something though. Just see about that, Casper." Almayer clapped his hands, and receiving no response was going to call, when in the central passage of the house, behind the red curtain of the doorway opening upon the veranda, they heard a child's imperious voice speaking shrilly. "Take me up at once. I want to be carried into the veranda. I shall be very angry. Take me up." A man's voice answered, subdued, in humble remonstrance. The faces of Almayer and Lingard brightened at once. The old seaman called out, "Bring the child. Lekas. You will see how he has grown," exclaimed Almayer, in a jubilant tone. Through the curtain doorway Ally appeared with little Nina Almayer in his arms. The child had one arm round his neck, and with the other she hugged a ripe pumelo nearly as big as her own head. Her little pink sleeveless robe had half slipped off her shoulders, but the long black hair that framed her olive face, in which the big black eyes looked out in childish solemnity, fell in luxuriant profusion over her shoulders, all round her, and over Ali's arms, like a close meshed and delicate net of silken threads. Lingard got up to meet Ali, and as soon as she caught sight of the old seaman she dropped the fruit and put out both her hands with a cry of delight. He took her from the Malay, and she laid hold of his mustaches with an affectionate goodwill that brought unaccustomed tears into his little red eyes. "Not so hard, little one, not so hard," he murmured, pressing with an enormous hand that covered it entirely, the child's head to his face. "Pick up my pumelo, O Raja of the Sea," she said, speaking in a high-pitched, clear voice with great volubility. Here, under the table. I want it quick. Quick. You have been away fighting with many men. Ally says so. You are a mighty fighter. Ally says so. On the great sea far away, away, away. She waved her hand, staring with dreamy vacancy, while Lingard looked at her, and squatting down groped under the table after the pumilo. Where does she get those notions? Said Lingard, getting up cautiously, to Elmayer, who had been giving orders to Ali. She is always with the men. Many a time I found her with her fingers in their rice dish, of an evening. She does not care for her mother, though I am glad to say. How pretty she is and so sharp. My very image. Lingard had put the child on the table, and both men stood looking at her with radiant faces. A perfect little woman, whispered Lingard. Yes, my dear boy, we shall make her somebody. You will see. Very little chance of that now, remarked Elmayer, sadly. You do not know, exclaimed Lingard, taking up the child again, and beginning to walk up and down the veranda. Have my plans. I have listened. And he began to explain to the interested Elmayer his plans for the future. He would interview Abdullah and Lakamba. There must be some understanding with those fellows now they had the upper hand. Here he interrupted himself to swear freely, while the child, who had been diligently fumbling about his neck, had found his whistle, and blew a loud blast now, and then close to his ear which made him wince and laugh as he put her hands down, scolding her lovingly. Yes, that would be easily settled. He was a man, to be reckoned with yet. Nobody knew that better than Elmayer. Very well. Then he must patiently try, and keep some little trade together. It would be all right. But the great thing, and here Lingard spoke lower, bringing himself to a sudden standstill before the entranced Elmayer, the great thing would be the gold hunt up the river. He Lingard would devote himself to it. He had been in the interior before. There were immense deposits of alluvial gold there. Fabulous. He felt sure. Had seen places. Dangerous work? Of course. But what a reward. He would explore and find. Not a shadow of doubt. Hang the danger. They would first get as much as they could for themselves. Keep the thing quiet. Then after a time form a company. In Batavia or in England? Yes, in England. Much better. Splendid. Why, of course. And that baby would be the richest woman in the world. He Lingard would not, perhaps, see it although he felt good for many years yet but Elmayer would. Here was something to live for yet. Hey? But the richest woman in the world had been for the last 5 minutes shouting shrilly, Ajalot! Rajalot! Hi! Give ear! While the old seaman had been speaking louder, unconsciously, to make his deep bass heard above the impatient clamor. He stopped now, and said tenderly, What is it, little woman? I am not a little woman. I am a white child. A Nakputa. A white child. And the white men are my brothers. Father says so. And Ally says so too. Ally knows as much as father. Everything. Elmayer almost danced with paternal delight. I taught her. I taught her, he repeated, laughing with tears in his eyes. SN'T she sharp? I am the slave of the white child, said Lingard, with playful solemnity. Had is the order? I want a house, she warbled, with great eagerness. Want a house, and another house on the roof, and another on the roof high. High. Like the places where they dwell my brothers in the land where the sun sleeps. To the westward, explained Elmayer, under his breath. He remembers everything. She wants you to build a house of cards. You did, last time you were here. Lingard sat down with the child on his knees, and Elmayer pulled out violently one drawer after another, looking for the cards, as if the fate of the world depended upon his haste. He produced a dirty double pack which was only used during Lingard's visit to Sambor, when he would sometimes play of an evening with Elmayer, a game which he called Chinese Bezique. It bored Elmayer, but the old seaman delighted in it, considering it a remarkable product of Chinese genius, a race for which he had an unaccountable liking and admiration. "Now we will get on, my little pearl," he said, putting together with extreme precaution two cards that looked absurdly flimsy between his big fingers. Little Nina watched him with intense seriousness as he went on erecting the ground floor, while he continued to speak to Almayer with his head over his shoulder so as not to endanger the structure with his breath. "I know what I am talking about. Been in California in 49. Not that I made much then in Victoria in the early days. I know all about it. Trust me. Moreover, a blind man could. Be quiet, little sister, or you will knock this affair down. My hand pretty steady yet. Hey, Casper? Now, delight of my heart, we shall put a third house on the top of these two. Keep very quiet. As I was saying, you got only to stoop and gather handfuls of gold. Dust. There. Now here we are. Three houses on top of one another. Grand." He leaned back in his chair, one hand on the child's head, which he smoothed mechanically, and gesticulated with the other, speaking to Almayer. Once on the spot, there would be only the trouble to pick up the stuff. Then we shall all go to Europe. The child must be educated. We shall be rich. Rich is no name for it. Down in Devonshire where I belong, there was a fellow who built a house near Teignmouth which had as many windows as a three-decker as ports. Made all his money somewhere out here in the good old days. People around said he had been a pirate. We boys, I was a boy in a Brixham trawler then, certainly believed that. He went about in a bath chair in his grounds. Had a glass eye. Higher, called out Nina, pulling the old seaman's beard. "You do worry me, don't you?" said Lingard, gently, giving her a tender kiss. "Hat? One more house on top of all these? Well, I will try." The child watched him breathlessly. When the difficult feat was accomplished, she clapped her hands, looked on steadily, and after a while gave a great sigh of content. "Oh! Look out!" shouted Almayer. The structure collapsed suddenly before the child's light breath. Lingard looked discomposed for a moment. Almayer laughed, but the little girl began to cry. "Take her," said the old seaman, abruptly. Then, after Almayer went away with the crying child, he remained sitting by the table, looking gloomily at the heap of cards. "Damn this Willems," he muttered to himself. "But I will do it yet." He got up, and with an angry push of his hand, swept the cards off the table. Then he fell back in his chair. Tired as a dog, he sighed out, closing his eyes. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.